Go wild with Nation Gear's end of regular season merch madness sale. Nation Gear is offering our favorite fans 20% off all regular season merch, and we're going to give you free shipping on any orders over $200. Stock up your closet for the playoffs, rep your team, and grab that merch you've been eyeing up all season long. Don't wait. This sale only lasts from April 1st until April 7th. Shop the sale at nationgear.ca.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your host, Derek Nasty Suttermeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. This week's guest is NHL veteran enforcer Todd Fedorik. Time to face off.
Welcome back to Nasty Knuckles. I'm Riley Cote.
I'm Derek Suttermeyer, and today we have a good buddy in the studio with us, the Fridge, Todd Fedorik. Welcome, brother.
How's it going, guys?
Great.
So you got a little podcast going, set up. Nice shop.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate you coming by, brother.
Yeah, man. Great to have you, bro.
So what's been going on?
With me? Well, that's a loaded question. It's been 10 years since I've played. So you basically have to start another life for yourself, right?
Yeah. The truth.
No, it's just I settled in the area. Flyers, you know, it's an organization, you know, if you stay involved with them and you do stuff with them, then they kind of help you along your way. And, you know, I've been fortunate. I started working with them originally when I first retired, doing some community stuff. And then you kind of find your way, left the nest, and just been doing business things here and there. But, you know, currently right now, and kind of probably I can guarantee for the rest of my life, I kind of found the passion play, and I was fortunate enough now to be joining a pretty cool team in the recovery community for drugs and substance abuse and alcohol. So
good for you.
Currently it's, you know, it's something that I want to do. I'm part of a great team. And it's one of those passion plays that I never thought I'd be doing, but you know, I enjoy it, and I never thought I would. So, and the team that is associated there with, you know, we've got Brooks Henderson and Dr. Joe Savon and Joel Albano's. It's just a top-notch group of individuals that care about the community that we're in.
Yeah.
And ultimately, the disease of substance abuse and addiction it's something that's threaded to all of us, but, I mean, I played hockey for a long time, but now that's kind of what I do. So I wanted to put that out there right away. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, you know what? I love it, man. And you do some of the same stuff too, you know, it's just different ways, but
yeah,
this is something I kind of found a niche in. And
yeah.
Love what I'm doing. Love the group, the opportunity we have as a team, and, you know, the landscape for us to be, you know, growing in this space you know, we're providing help to a lot of people. So
yeah.
that's kind of what I'm doing now. That's the latest and greatest.
That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the hardest part, I think, when guys retire is to find, you know, re-identify and recreate themselves and find that, you know, that passion play like you're talking about. So I'm happy that you found that. I think that's a big key to finding mental wellness and, you know, your true purpose in life. So props to you for that.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. Jumping in some hockey stuff, you know, we got to tap into your career because you were one of the funniest dudes I ever had a chance to play with. And every single time, the one story that comes to mind was 04-05, lockout with the Phantoms. Your first game on that team, I think it was maybe 10 games in, you joined the team. And I'm sitting beside you on the bench. I want you to tell that story because every single time you just you get me cracking up.
Oh, my God. Well, that was when I got hit with a slap shot in the head, right?
That one.
I think it was John Slaney.
Oh, yeah.
Went to rim it, you know, just around the glass.
Yeah. And, like, there's a lead up to that story. And, like, it's just, it was almost like, so we were in the lockout that year. So it was like I was an established NHL guy, not like an all-star, anything like that. Always a fourth line guy. But I had played and then, going back to the NHL would kind of be you'd be looked at as a scab, but I didn't care. I was too young and I needed to make money.
Right.
Nobody really gave me trouble, but there was still that little bit of talking with the older veteran guys in the NHL and making that transition. Whatever the Flyers asked me to do, I was going to do.
Right.
That was part of why they enjoyed me and part of why they liked me. So they asked me to go play in the first game. They're like, all right, we want you to work on your game because obviously I'm a fighter. We all know that. And we don't want you fighting, you know, work on your game. Be a good leader on the team. You know, these guys will be looking up to you. You're an older guy coming down. And I was like, yeah, great, no problem. First game, just settled in. And it was like the second shift, getting a fight with Zenon Konopka right away. Yeah. Right? So like, it's going that way. We're playing hockey again. And then we're on the penalty power play. And I had known Riley from back in junior. When he was a 16-year-old kid, I was one of the older guy, veteran guys. And like, had spark, was an intense guy then, like really enjoyed him, he had what it takes even at that age. And sure enough, he's the most intense guy I know to this day, and he's right beside me on the bench, and we're trying to watch the play. We're on the power play and close game, so we're in the game and power play, I'm separating the D and the forwards, right?
Yeah.
I don't do much
grocery
power
stick. You and both, yeah.
grocery stick, separating the D and forwards. And then so Riley gets up because they're making a play at the blue line. He gets up like this and he's trying to see if he keeps it in. And then I'm like, he's in the way. So I turned and looked around him and the puck's coming rimmed and it bounces right off of Freddie Meyer's toe. And it's like slow motion. I see Riley kind of matrix out of the way. He's like, whoa, my head's right there. I'm like this. Bing, right in the bucket, in the head. But it hit right here in the sinus. So it's thinner bone. But it hit the helmet too. And Riley's, I went like instantly like this, and I was in so much pain. Like it was a sinus cavity and it made a dent, like a visible dent. And Riley's like, holy shit, yelling at me, did that hit you in the fucking head, man? And I was like, right in the head, coach. He's just like, holy, because he noticed it was a slap shot. He's worried for me.
Yeah.
He's like, Jimmy's our trainer.
Fridge just got hit in the head with a clapper, man. Get down here.
Yeah, look at his head.
And I'm pretty sure Jimmy knew. I think we all knew.
Yeah, the whole bench knew.
Everybody knew I was hit in the head with a clapper. And Riley's right there just caring for me.
Just making sure everyone knew what had happened.
Hit him in the actual face.
I actually heard him go, does it hit him in the head? It sounded like his helmet. And then I'm like, no, that was my helmet and bone. And then I go into the back. And I still hear Riley on the bench.
Yeah, man, I hit him right in the fucking head.
I'm going back down the tunnel, and sure enough, I see Coates come in. I'm sitting on the trainer's table like this, and Riley comes back in here. That hit you. Comes right into the training room just to make sure I'm okay. Man, that hit you right in the head. And I was like,
thanks, Tips.
Thanks, man. He goes, are you okay? And I was like, well, I can go to the hospital. And he's like, yep. And he's looking at the hole in my head, and he goes, right there, huh? And he walks out. Oh, man, I don't know why that sticks out in my head, but it does. One of the stories with Riley.
And the way you tell it, too, is priceless.
That was a great year, man.
It was amazing.
Amazing team. That was an NHL all-star team. Patrick Sharp, Yoni Pikkanen, and Dennis Seidenberg.
Jeff Carter.
Jeff Carter, Richards. How about those two guys?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was amazing.
coming from junior, that doesn't happen.
No, and most of those guys hadn't played in the NHL yet. I mean, Pickenin and Seinberg had a little stint, maybe Sharpie a little bit.
Jeff Carter's never eaten lobster before that.
Yeah, right.
We were in New Jersey, and he's like, I'm like, oh, I'm playing big shot. I'm like, yeah, you're up in the pros now. We go out for dinner like this, team dinners. You ever have lobster? He's like, you never had lobster? And then he ordered some lobster. He's like, yeah, we're big wheels here in the AHL and the minors.
Right. What a league.
But it's just amazing because they're so young. They were so young and they're so, it's like a naivety. They were 18, 19 years old.
Yeah.
You know, sure. And they were allowed to play with us and just hit the ice in full stride. Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, Karts led our team the AHL in scoring in playoffs in junior hockey. He was pretty
studs.
Pretty amazing, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I enjoyed him as guys too. Richie's a good leader, man, and he led his own ways. But that's what you want leaders to do, to do it their way. And those are the ones you follow. I enjoyed my time with him.
Yeah,
he was ahead of his years, I think, from leadership perspective.
I think so too.
And they,
he's old
school. Pegged him right out of the gate. Like,
yeah,
there's probably a test or something. But you can pick them. Like, the guy's like, this guy's going to be our captain.
Well, he won at every level, Richie.
Yeah. I mean,
literally. Like, he's basically won everything you could win.
And liked.
Yeah.
But that's even better. When the guy's got
really
charisma.
Well liked. Yeah.
You know, those awesome. Are the best guys, you know.
One of our favorite guys for sure, man. Friggy, I know the first time I saw you, I hadn't met you yet. We're having camp, and Roger Nielsen wanted us to go to Peterborough. So we drove the equipment up early. Players were kind of coming in on their own. So we're set up. It took us a good day to set up. So next day we had a few little things to do. All the players coming in. We got a meeting around dinner time. So it's 2 in the afternoon, and we're like, let's go grab a quick little lunch. Me and Jim Evers, Turk, Joey Rivera was with me then. And we're sitting at a table, and there's this guy up at the bar, and he's got hair down to here, and it's white. It's so white and blonde. I'm like, wow. And the guy kind of turns around. He's got a fucking dart glass of whiskey. I'm like, well, I remember saying, holy cow, look at this guy. He's hurting. Boy, 2 in the afternoon, having a couple whiskeys and some darts, you know. About 3 hours later, we walk into this big meeting. There's like 70 players there. Oh. That guy's there. It's you.
Yeah.
I said, that's that guy that was at the bar. I didn't even know you were a kid. He was like, he was so big.
Yeah, right.
And he just had a few drinks, you know, at the thing. And it was so funny. And then obviously I got to know you and met you. And, you know, the hair got trimmed soon after, but
my God, did they straighten me out. I was a farm. I was a raw farm kid from Western Canada.
Yeah.
And I remember that. I gravitated to Sandy McCarthy. Who else was there? Sandy McCarthy was there.
God.
Chief was there.
Yeah.
And I think they just said, you come with us, kid. And I just tagged along. And that's kind of like the way it was. And they were up there too. And I was like, guess this is the show, boys.
Gary Coupal was there.
Gary Coupal. He was
banned from junior. He was banned from junior.
Yeah.
He did something. I can't remember exactly. I think he slashed.
Those are different things.
That was the beginning.
That was the beginning of the story of my rookie season.
In
the minors.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what a team! What a team of veterans, man. There's no wonder it was as messy as it was. Garrett Burnett was there.
Oh, man.
Frankie Bialoa, Staples, Jeff Staples. There's more tough guys.
Yeah.
Payette.
Yeah.
Boulanger, Lassard.
Yep.
Holy smokes.
Wow, that's
it. Was
different game.
That's a crew.
Completely different game.
Jesse.
Bullerese, Boom Boom.
I mean,
yeah.
It was
meat.
Few of you guys. A little bit of meat.
A little
lineup.
Bit of meat, a little bit of raw talent.
Yeah.
All needed development, all physical flyer type players. But.
Yeah.
And all disasters off the ice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that was the time.
That was the way it was.
It was like, not mandatory, but you go out, you drink hard, you party hard, you go out with the team, and that's how your bonding is done. And I think it's got to still be that way. You need to loosen things up, and I'm sure the teams still do that, but I don't think it's in the same light as they do it. There's
not
a doctor
consistent
there now. You know? Somebody guiding them through the process of bonding with another man in the dressing room. I don't know. They're getting super analytical with things in today's game.
Yeah. So. I think guys still do the bonding stuff and, you know, they drink now and then. But I don't think it was as religious as guys did back in the day, which was like you basically leave the rink and then you go find a hot spot. And
you get trapped in a lunch with one of the older guys.
You're in one.
You're in one. 4 or 5 o'clock.
The
introduction to the world.
Sure.
We had Hartzi in here a couple weeks ago, and he talked about the story back in juniors. We were 16-year-old rookies, him and I, playing Regina Pats, and Fridgie's skating the puck up the ice, and Hartzi's coming back to the middle of the ice, and you cut through the middle of the ice, and he
just disintegrated me. And Hartzi was a rookie, too.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
So, and it's magnified back then, too. Like, if you're a tough guy back then, because you're 16 years old, right? They're like, don't touch him. And, like, you didn't touch tough guys. So I was one of those guys with Regina. And Hartzi crumpled me. Like, but he was good, too, Hartzi. He was a really good player. But he hit guys. And he hit guys hard. And
he's
a
man
hit child. Everybody.
Yeah.
He hit everybody. And, like, you like that in a guy. But he got me so good. And then he snickered. He snickered after. I guarantee he didn't tell you that.
No, he didn't.
He snickered after. He went like, oh, I got, like, he knew he got me. And there's no, he shouldn't have. Got me with my head down. And, like, as a tough guy, you're like, oh. And I was young, and I just planted in my seed, this kid is dead. This kid is dead. This kid is dead. I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill him.
And next day.
Unbeknownst to him, I get traded that night after that game. And he's the first one that sees me, and that smile on his face.
Right.
I'm so happy because we were doing back to back. I'm so happy you're on our team now. And I was like, I was going to kill you, kid. He's just like, oh, I was so happy. Coach Codden, he told me, their coach actually told Hartzi first. He's like, you're lucky, but Oryx ours now. I actually joined Prince Albert, and that's when I joined you.
Yeah, like the next day, right?
Hartzi, what a guy, what a character. Yeah, man. That was a fun team, too.
It was, Well, Big Mac there, right? Kevin McClellan is a coach. I mean,
yeah, used to eat smokes.
Yeah, used to see, exactly.
You used to eat smokes outside the bus.
Swallow the whole butt and everything and blow out the smoke.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That was our head coach.
Yeah.
I loved him.
I learned to love him. You know, my first year in 16, I had a love-hate relationship with him because he just buried me all the time.
Oh, and, he was just so hard on you.
So hard on me, too. Just like,
that was the MO, though. Like,
I appreciate it now, though, for sure. At the time,
you do, but I think it got out of hand. Like, you see some of the storylines that are out there now.
Yeah.
What happened, boys? Like, it got out of control with some of the shit that's going on. I remember you hear about all that stuff, and you worry about it. And there's a level of responsibility the older guys on any group have to the group, right?
Like,
you know, and that's where things went astray, I think.
Yeah.
Our veterans never pushed it too far. I'm talking about the stuff when you're done in junior with hazing and stuff. Our veterans knew where the line was, you know, but I could see how some teams didn't have that, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a touchy subject in today's game, but that's where that's kind of the MO for, you know, making your way in hockey. That is like, get off the bus, you do the bags. Like, that's your job as a rookie. You're unpacking all the bags, and you're packing the stick bags, and you're doing that grunt work, and it's just part of anything. It's good for people.
Oh, for sure, yeah. I think there's a line there, right? That we've obviously exposed that line of, like, being hard on the young guys and making them pull bags and then getting into the whole, you know, sexual misconduct stuff, obviously. I didn't experience that in PA there. I think they actually implemented a no-hazing policy probably, you know, before I was even there and probably in your early Western Hockey League career.
I don't know. I think the hockey communities, I think they've been pretty on top of things. Like, when things come out, they respond. It's not like they... I'm not going to sit here and say that they sweep things under the rug. It's bullshit.
Yeah.
These are kids that are growing up playing a great game. And if things happen and things are reported, it's dealt with.
Yeah.
And that's my experience, you know, in the game of hockey. And that's why I love it.
Yeah.
I love it to this day. You know, it's given me, you know, a good life.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, so, for sure.
I'll always like it. Yeah, I'll always love the game. You know, it's changed now, but it's a... I mean, look at this.
Yeah, thing, exactly.
You guys are doing a whole other thing because of the game we love and
the
network of hockey. And it's cool, man.
Yeah.
It's a cool thing to do.
Well, I was, as you know me well, you've known me a long time. Like to play jokes here and there on people. And
I learned from watching you.
The year, going back to that fun year we had, the lockout year, we used to play a joke where I would put one of our trainers in a bag, in a goalie bag. Yeah. And what I would do is I would grab a kid from the other team and I'd say, hey, can you help me grab this laundry? It's heavy. And as soon as he'd grab the bag and go to pull it, the kid would come flying out of the bag. And obviously guys would shit their pants because they didn't expect that. So we have one set up and we're going to get this kid. Well, the bus pulls up and you guys come walking in. Now, some people don't know. Guys are just getting up from naps, which you two know.
The guy you put in the bag was a rookie too.
Yeah, he was.
As a worker.
So boys are coming in with their coffees, trying to get going. You know, it's around four, games at seven, and we're in Portland, Maine. And here comes Fridgy down the hall. Well,
you fucking turned around and walked away. You're like, shit.
The bag gets grabbed, and Fridgy happens to be walking by. Well, here comes the trainer that works for us, comes flying out of the bag. Fridge comes off the floor, like, obviously half asleep. This is the last guy you want to do this to, obviously. Right. He jumps up, screams. Turns around, guys like kind of laughing. Oh, he didn't really know it was fridge, coffee, whoop, right on him. So he throws his coffee on him. And I'm like, oh shit. So I turn around, act like I didn't even see it. He's like, you know, he's throwing a towel on him. But that was what I'll never forget. It happened to me. There's a lesson
for the young lad.
Coffee burns.
Yeah, right. Be careful who you play the pranks on, young lad.
Oh my God, that was funny.
Oh, that's the first thing you do though. Like veterans know if you have something in your hand, pour it on them. Sorry, it's stalling hot. I'm sorry. I'm sorry about burning you. Third degree burns. I actually feel bad after that, but. Yeah, we worked. We got a couple guys after that too. It was good fun. That is one of the best ones. Can you help me take this stick bag? Yeah, sure, no problem.
I've done it plenty of times.
Was that an instinctive reaction, or were you just like pissed off?
I was pissed off. I said nobody plays pranks on me, and I burnt him and hurt him. I was that guy. I could dish it out. You're not allowed to give it to me. Not a chance. I'm that guy. That's the biggest asshole sometimes. Yeah. I was that guy. Like, yeah, I can bug you, but you can't bug me. No, it doesn't work like that.
Oh
man, because the pranks can get out of control.
Oh yeah, they can.
Get out of control. I'll cut your car in half. I've heard that before. And I don't doubt that it would happen. I've heard of guys' cars getting filled up to the brim with popcorn.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Salmon on the engine block. Who was the one guy in Chicago, Andy Delmore, just rookie, just brought a new coat. And this is another one of those stories. Don't get mixed up with the wrong guy. Bundy's the wrong guy.
Yes.
He's the wrong guy. And he was the guy that said, I'll cut your car in half. And he was the guy that did it, would do it. So him and Deli were just going at each other.
Yeah.
And it was going on all year. And it had gotten to the point where we had a team meeting about it, where it's got to calm down. But this is like this was the last straw. Deli just got his first paycheck. We were out in Chicago. He just bought it like a new $2,000 Boss coat, right? For the cold wind in Chicago, the windy city. And Deli was all about the duds, right? Like all about it, like proud guy. And before we went on that road trip, he actually hammered Bundy's shoes to the bench.
Yeah.
And everyone ratted Deli out instantly. Bundy's like, who the hell did this? And the whole team was like, Deli did it. Rookie, you don't do it. Don't do it. And Bundy waited and bided time. He would tease Deli like, this is bad. This is bad. This has gone on a month. We're on this road trip. And sure enough, Deli's talking about this coat for a week prior and how warm it is and how great it is. And it's $2,000. We have our team skate in Chicago and everyone gets off the ice and Deli's usually one of the last guys out, right? And everybody was waiting in the change room because nobody wanted to leave.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the whole team's in the change room. Usually everyone's on the bus, right? But the whole team's there just waiting for Deli to come in. And Deli comes in, he's getting dressed and grabs his coat and he's looking around. He's like, where's Bundy? And he's actually looking for Bunny because he thinks something's going on.
Right.
Like, there's everybody in here. Puts his arm through the coat. His arm goes right through. He's got no arms on his coat. Wow. $2,000 coat down the drain. He's like this. He almost, his lower lip started quivering. He got so angry because everybody was there. Everybody pointed and laughed at him.
Yeah.
And he's like, Morgan Bundy, right at Bundy. And Bundy's like, it wasn't me. It was just beautiful. Yeah. One of those things, man. One of those things cut his armless the whole rest of the road trip.
That's pretty good.
Pranks are great.
That one. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
You got safe ones like that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, those are the safe ones. Yeah. No one's getting hurt. No. Maybe there's their ego a little bit. That's pretty good.
But you got to put an end to it at that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And then they did.
That kills it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Boogeyman. Talk about, the fight with Boogeyman. Mm. And then you landed up playing with him and becoming good buddies with him. And, you know, what type of impact he had on your life.
Oh, man. He was kind of threaded to my life since he was 15 years old. I think I was 19. And the first time we initially met was in Regina. He came to the camp. And me and Kyle Frederick were the two tough guys there. Right. Freddie's 6'5". He played Tampa Bay and fought in the NHL. And Kyle Frederick. And then Boogie was there. So I seen 15 years old. And I seen 6'7". I'm like, whoa. But then you seen him skate. He couldn't skate at all. Like, terrible. And we're like, oh, he has to learn to skate before he can fight. Because he knew he was there for one thing. Once you seen him skate, right? Yeah. And, I'm not saying I'm any better. I know where I was. But he was kind of there for that. And he did that in that camp. So that was the first taste I had of him. But and then you'd hear him coming up the ranks. And when I had seen him make the NHL, I was like, oh, man, he made it. Like, this guy's got all the parts to be the top guy. Length is the biggest advantage in hockey fights. I don't care what anybody says. Yeah. If you have length and power to hold a guy out and they can't reach you,
mm-hmm.
it was the biggest advantage you could have.
Yeah.
You know? And he had that, right? He's 6'7", 260 pounds.
Yeah. And he learned how to use it. Because in juniors, he didn't really learn how to use it, right?
No, he learned how to use it. And it was through a lot of trial and error. Right. Like, he took a lot of beatings to understand how his body worked. And obviously, he became...
dangerous.
I think the toughest guy outside of Bob Probert. Like, probably the toughest guy.
Yeah.
Number two. Easy number two to Probert. You know, I would love to see that fight.
Oh.
You know? But I just think Proby had him on the tough guy persona, the attitude.
Right.
You like Proby. Yeah,
he's hungry.
Just keeps going
harder
and harder. So I was with Anaheim the first time we'd fought, and he was making his way up. So he was fighting everybody, and he was knocking guys out left, right, and center. So you knew right away he had to be dangerous. And the first fight I had with him was a good tilt. It was a good tilt. I thought I beat him. He'd come out of his stuff. I was able to keep going at him. Didn't really catch me with anything. And then later the next year, I grabbed him again. He went after Kunitz. And there's a little bit of a history between the two franchises. We were playing really tough. And Minnesota had a tough team too. So we clashed right away. And Boogs hit Kunitz. And Kunitz hurt his knee. I think he sprained his MCL. So my job is to make sure that if that happens, you're not allowed to do that. So... the message needed to be sent. I chased him around a little bit. He didn't want to fight me. And then I said, you don't have a choice. Like, you're fighting because you did that. And so he fought, and I got put in the wrong position. And he hit me so hard, it completely blew out my orbit, my cheekbone. It was a career-changing hit. You hear about guys that once they get hit a certain way, you're never the same. Well, that was that for me.
Yeah.
You know, I was never the same after that, nor could I. I had to adapt to that injury, change my fighting style. But the when you have the threat of losing your eye and you understand that this is the problem, that's why you're never the same.
Yeah.
You know now that there's more on the line. You can seriously get hurt, you know. So that's he forever changed the course of my hockey career. But I later got traded to Minnesota, and then, like, for whatever reason, probably the injury, I don't know what it was, but the coach put us right beside each other when I first got traded there, because the year before was the year he hurt me, right? So go in there, and Jacques Lemaire is the greatest coach I've ever had, hands down. he knew right away to just break the ice. So he put us beside each other. We were stallmates. Like, he was literally right here, right? And Boogie hit this side of my face, right? So the whole room was quiet. And this is the level of respect guys have for tough guys in the NHL. I don't care what anybody says. That whole room was scared shitless. They were wondering, are these guys going to kill each other?
Yeah.
Who's going to break it up? One guy, 265. I'm putting my head down and just tying my skates. And that's what the whole room was like. And there was veteran guys in there, Dimitra, and they were like, you know. And then I was like, hey, Bugs, you want to switch sides with me? And he's like, why? And I go, well, you crushed this side of my face. I broke the ice, right?
Yeah.
Broke the ice.
Oh, man,
but the laugh
bad.
That came out...
It was unsure.
It was just like, ah, thank God. Ah. It was like a relief.
Yeah.
A relief laugh. But it set the stage for the room, right?
Yeah.
It was an intimidating thing, but me and Boogs hit it off right away, you know, and then through that season we became close friends. Like best friends. He was my best friend when I was there. He kept apologizing to me too. Like, and then you find out the dynamic of the effect you have on somebody's life earlier. Like, we got really close because he talked about those. He's like, man, you and Freddie, like, I looked up to you guys. And you never think that about somebody younger.
Yeah.
Like, really? And it was taking me back. And he's like, I was so scared of you, man. I was like, what? Oh my God, you gotta understand, you're the one people are afraid of.
Right.
So there's those that it's just it was a really good relationship we built. I enjoyed him. He was close with my son Luke at the time, and Luke was like 3-4 years old. So, and he'd come over all the time. We got really close. We were teammates, you know, and we fought with each other and played together. And then at the end, obviously, Derek Boogaard is no longer with us. He passed because of an overdose to opiates. And, you know, he tried to get this. And I was right there with him through it, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, it's just there's I get emotional because, I have history with substance abuse and understand that the disease and the sickness just ultimately wants us dead, you know. And it's jails, institutions, or death with the disease of substance abuse, alcoholism. And, you know, part of it is helping others, you know, when you're sober, and we confided in that way with each other too. And he was just one of those guys who couldn't get it, you know, and he went out, and that's one thing, like, when you have a couple of days off of this drug, you know, the opiates and stuff, your tolerance drastically drops.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't realize that. So when they go back out, they try to use the same amount. And his lungs just shut down. So, you know.
Terrible.
And it takes people, and it affects not only the thread of people it affects. You know, it's not only one death. It's everyone that doesn't understand the disease that's so close to them.
Yeah.
You know, and... I remember saying to him, you're the only person in the world that can look yourself in the mirror and understand if you have a problem. You know, and he, you know, the answer you want is like, you're right, man. And they kind of realize it. I didn't get that from him, and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a shame, you know, and then his brother gets tied.
Yeah.
And his brother gets tied into it, and his family gets destroyed. And
destroys families.
I mean, destroys families, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, so that's a life story. That was spawned out of a beautiful love for the game of hockey.
Yeah,
that ended in a tragedy for one man and his family. But it's one of the main reasons that fuels me.
Yeah,
in order to do what I'm doing today.
Yeah,
it's one of the reasons that I believe I was put in a position to help others.
Like, yeah,
so. If I ever have to question my resolve or have anybody question my resolve in this, I've had those experiences to qualify myself to do this.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah.
There's a big difference when, look, I loved playing hockey, and I was told that to do something you love and get paid for it is more than a man can ask for once in his life.
No kidding.
So, blessed.
No, that's the truth.
Yeah, I believe I'm a blessed man.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you're here to tell
people
about
around
it.
Me. That's there's more. It's more about the people around me. I didn't have much to do with any of this. You know, it was really just the willingness to take direction from a good group of men, and they're everything to me.
Yeah,
like they're the guys I can depend on. You know, and I'm talking about a recovery community.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a stigma in society today that, you know what, that doesn't need to be there. It just does not need to be there, because the threat of this disease is, it's 2 degrees of separation. It's too normal. So, you know, the care for it has to be normalized as well.
Yeah.
It should be normal for you to be able to go to a physician's office in a nice area with a nice building and say, I'm addicted to opiates. I've got to get off them. All right, well, we've got a plan for that.
Yeah.
Why should that be embarrassing to you? These are powerful, powerful compounds and drugs. Yeah. You have no defense against this.
No.
You know, it's nobody's fault, but there's help.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of the message, and that's what I've been aligned with some of the guys at New Life. You know, they have that passion. They have the medical knowledge and the clinical capabilities to also understand this is something needs to be dealt for. So you have pioneers right now doing things that are paving the way for how it should be ingrained in society. It's okay, you know, and that's kind of the message these guys aligned with, because this affects everybody.
Oh yeah,
nobody's immune to this.
Yeah,
you know, it's just like the virus, whatever you want to call it. But man, it's just nice to be able to be in a position with like-minded people doing something I love again.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, it's awesome, and you know, being able to you know, take your expertise, your knowledge, and resources to help, you know, bring it back and say to the hockey world and help, you know, guys are struggling. Cause I mean, you know, it hasn't gone away, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, substance abuse will never go away.
Yeah.
But all we can do is really kind of bring more, you know, tools and resources to the forefront to help these guys out. Right.
Knowledge is power. Yeah. Knowledge is power. Yeah. Educating, informing everybody, understanding this isn't, you know, pick up the phone.
Yeah.
It's literally all it is. Just like making an appointment for the doctor.
Yeah.
You're making an appointment for ending the sickness and misery that's in your life.
Yeah.
Make the call.
Right. Yeah.
That's really all it takes. So it's a lot more wrapped up in actually performing that act, but the help is out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm glad to be on that forefront, like you said, with that network, right? Because even the hockey community and you know, the communities that we live in, like, it's a nice responsibility to be able to give back and utilize that network to help something like this.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the big things a lot of athletes have to find is, more so now than ever, is their ability to influence, their ability to have a bigger audience there with their network, you know, doing things like this.
And, yeah.
It's a pretty neat environment for everybody in professional sports, and you see it happening everywhere. So
yeah, it's much needed.
Mm-hmm.
Changing topics, and I just had a thought come through my head. Talk about your allergy to seafood.
One of the worst things. Why the fuck did you bring that up? I hate that. I have an allergy. This is a real allergy, but I found out halfway. And you know what, Nasty? I love you because you kept my shit smelling half decent, boys. It's not an allergy. It's not an allergy. What I found out it was, my wife explained it to me because she has to deal with it. And there's a certain enzyme that my body doesn't break, or I'm lacking an enzyme or something like that. And it's an oil or it's a protein in fish, mainly in fish, right? Actually, only in fish.
I was gonna say.
And when I eat it, I smell like a dead fish. Yeah. It's disgusting.
That's one of the worst smells.
It's the worst smell. It's like, and you don't want to be that guy in a sweaty locker room full of guys that you want to be a part of. Like, what is that smell? And I get traded a lot. You walk in there and you're like, shit, I ate fucking fish last night.
Yeah.
And then the guys beside is like, what's that fucking smell? And I'm like, it's me, man. It's fucking me. And they're like, that's disgusting. And I was like, I know, I've been dealing with it my whole life. It's actually one of the main things that I'm super insecure about. He's like, yeah, it's fucking stinks.
You stink.
I'm like, Trina, can you wash my gear?
Yeah, your gear got washed more than any player I ever had. That's for sure.
Every team, I had to go into the locker room and be like, yeah, my gear needs to be washed.
Once everyone knew, it was like, oh, Friggy ate fish again.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
He would be like, you're not allowed to eat fish. No fish for this guy. Like, team dinners, No salmon for him, no shrimp, no nothing. Sometimes I eat a big thing of salmon just to
screw with the boys.
Really stink. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. That was rough. I remember the first time I smelled it, I was like, what the hell? I mean, you got a dead fish underneath the bench here?
But it's, like, oh, you know what I like about it? It is distinct to the smell of dead fish. It's so close that it's uncanny.
Yeah. It is.
I'm trying to make a positive out of a fucking. Yeah, that's nothing good. Why we always a good laugh.
Oh, always. Yeah.
Oh, man.
What about your time back into Philly? So you get traded back to Anaheim or from Anaheim?
Yeah, exactly. We were talking about this earlier.
Yeah.
I thought Paul Holmgren really liked you.
I know.
He traded you from
traded
the
me
first
back here from the first place team to the
absolute worst season we ever had with the Flyers.
Right. Ever.
40th season, right? 40th year.
Oh,
we
my God.
We were
it was
red rotten.
Brutal.
Red
sometimes
rot.
Those guys don't make the best calls. No.
Fridgie's on the first place team.
Right.
You know they're going to win
on
the
your
cup.
Way to Stanley
we
Cup.
Knew in October. I told the GM that. I told Brian Burke. I said, Berkey, because they were trying to re-sign me there, and he only had 2 years up on his deal, right? So that may have contributed, but I was like, look, Berkey, let me roll the dice this year, right? And I get hurt. So I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened, but I think it had something to do with the doctor telling the GM that I'd never play again and my career's over. And before I get out of the hospital, I'm traded back to Philadelphia, of all places, where I have a home. My wife's family's from, well, pretty convenient, eh? Who made the call? I ended up going back to Philadelphia as they get out of the hospital, and it was a shock. I wasn't ready for it. I was not done playing at the time, but they went on to win it that year, and we went on to have the absolute worst. And it was only a year prior that we were in the Eastern Conference Finals against Tampa Bay.
Before the
lockout.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
One season prior. So that's my memory of the Flyers. We should have won in those years. Those early 2000s years, man, that was the team, you know?
Yeah.
You know, but you just, that's... So anyways, I come back and I'm still thinking the culture's like that. And it's... I'm like, where is it? Where's the Flyers?
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't the same.
Yep.
No wonder, like that was the hardest year. That was the worst year the Flyers had ever had in franchise history.
Yeah, Homer,
10 or 11 in a row.
Yeah,
it was terrible. He made some really good trades near the deadline. You know, for a few guys like Scotty Upshaw and he got Braden Coburn in there, and then over the summer he picked up Hartnell. Teaming in,
that's right.
Danny B, and the next year, I know you were gone.
Yeah,
then
that's
you left,
when he started
we
building
ended up in conference finals that year.
Yeah, after, because that was his first kind. That was
yeah,
his
was
first
just,
year
with the Flyers because Clarkie stepped down. Mr.
That's
Clark
right.
stepped down.
That's right.
And Homer kind of took over on an interim basis. And,
yeah, but me and we've always been close. And you know what? To his credit, that's like you got the GMs and the people that are in control of our lives as young men, they can't not help themselves from taking on some sort of fathership role. These are 18-year-old kids that are coming. You know, the 20-year-old guys, it's only humanly natural for you to care about the guy, you know, for you to want to see him succeed, especially if you're a player, you know, because you know how important it is. And I think a lot of GMs have the ability to navigate those waters, and I think Paul Holmgren's one of those guys. You know, you can make mistakes along the way doing that, And I'm talking about navigating, you know, a personal relationship with a player and a professional relationship. And you kind of have to mix both, man, you know, I think in hockey. And the good GMs know how to do it right. There's clear lines. And I've had experience with good GMs that understand that. And look, the organization for the Philadelphia Flyers, to a man, have always taken care of the person rather than the hockey player. And that's from Mr. Snyder down.
Right.
You know, he put the work in as an owner. I think he's one of the greatest owners to ever own a franchise. And you'll hear that with every guy that's still a Flyer to this day.
Like,
nobody will ever argue that. And if you do, we'll punch you in the face. It's that simple.
That's true.
Right.
You're wrong.
That's true.
And that's just kind of, that's the Flyer way. So, and that'll never change. And, but they've always taken care of the man. That's why, work from within, because there is tradition with the little organization. They don't always make the best calls.
Yeah.
But that's why they're in those positions, to make those hard calls and stuff like that. Go ahead. I don't want that job.
Talk a little more about your relationship with Paul Holmgren. I know he was one of your biggest fans throughout your Flyer
okay,
days.
Yeah, well, I can't speak for Paul, but I can speak from my experience with him, and there was just similarities and comparisons that he's seen in me that didn't have much to do with hockey, and that really changed how I lived. And it was in a sport like hockey, having an individual like that available to anybody, that is willing to cross boundaries in order to help a person. It's because it's not about hockey then at certain
right.
stages. I think he was one of the guys that did that.
Yeah.
And he's you can read the newspapers. He's had his articles. He's had his struggles in life, and through those struggles, he's turned things around. And I mean, completely.
Yeah.
That's really the crux of the core relationship that we have. There was some guidance that I needed at a certain time in my life, and
yeah,
he was one that I identified with to get the help that I needed, right?
Yeah.
So that's and you know what, I think he's retired now, and he's going off, but it's, you see it in our game with you need father figures, but you need mentors as well. So
yeah.
Sometimes we don't do things in life and off the ice normally, and we kind of can get out of control, and you need people that can call you on it. And he was one of those guys for me, and he introduced me to something that worked for him, and it also works for me too. So, and that's something I deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And it's I'm very blessed to have had our lives cross paths.
Yeah, awesome.
There's bigger things going on there, so and I believe that today, that there's powers out there that put people in our lives. There's powers that are in charge of the grand design of what we're supposed to be doing, and all we have to do, and this goes to anybody, is tune in, man.
Like, yeah,
pay attention to that. Do the next right thing. Stay in contact with people you love. You know what I mean? Surround yourself with good people.
Yep.
Make that the thing to follow. Make that something that people should be doing. It's much easier to live on that side of the street than it is carrying around bullshit. You
right.
know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So yeah, he's been a big factor in mine, but in a lot of people's lives, I think. So yeah, and I still keep in contact to him to this day.
Awesome.
I will, till the ends of time, because the bond is that strong.
Yeah.
And it's a lot that way with teammates too.
Yeah.
And even new friends, that I have today. Real bonds,
Yeah.
So
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
So what do you think about the new NHL, or the game, the current day game? I mean, compared to obviously
honestly, I think they gotta put the red line back in and teach them how to hit again. They teach, because hitting is a part of the game, man. Like it is. It's not
Absolutely.
Physical. It's not violent. It's, I'm stronger than you, so work
separating
out.
Separating the man
I'm
from the
stronger
puck,
than
right?
you, so work out.
Yeah, right.
I'm stronger than you. Work out. Like it's a game of strength, agility, speed, mental fortitude, for some.
Yeah.
Oh, and grit, man. Like it takes all the pieces. You can't put 10, 20 guys on the ice at the same time with weapons and blades in an enclosed area and just expect them to play tummy sticks.
Yeah.
that's not exciting, right? About sport. Competitiveness, competing is.
Yeah.
Seeing somebody lose their mind over wanting to win.
Yep.
People want to see that from a safe place in their seats, so don't take it from that. I think the game should go back to that. I think that it just needs to be expressed properly. A few bad actors can ruin a bunch, right? there, I was a guy that did it the right way. And I was taught the right way to do it. Be respectful. Don't cheap shot. If a guy needs a cheap shot, he deserves it.
Yeah.
So you give him one. But when you hit a guy, you look him in the eyes. I'm not talking punching.
Yeah.
See, you're going to go line up a guy. Look him in the eyes. Let him know we're going to go into this corner hitting. Sometimes they'll turn around. Most of the time they turned away.
Oh, yeah.
But acknowledge.
Yeah.
Acknowledge. Right. And that's a respect factor that I don't think any of these guys know how to do. But they all want the ability to keep that part of their game because it's a pretty cool dynamic to have bare knuckle brawling as part of my sport, you know?
Yeah.
It is. So, and I'm obviously always going to be biased towards fighting, but the physical style, slow the game down, man. Like, it's become just about speed and it's not as creative. It's like you're getting a little too... They're overanalyzing the game, and that's becoming, turning into something we don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I like seeing a guy battle through the neutral zone, battle out of the corner, you know, not hooking and holding, but battling.
For sure.
You know, and I just think that the game needs to stay true to those things that, you know, when things get out of control, just reel it in. Don't eliminate it, you know.
It's easy for the anti-fighter crowd to harp on fighting because it's clear as day that getting punched in the face ain't good for your brain. But when only 4% of all concussions come from fighting, and you know 96% are coming from hits in games and practices. I mean, are we actually making the game safer by removing fighting? I mean, are we? No. I mean, what are your opinion on that?
No, I don't. Absolutely not. And reason being is that hitting actually prevented. Or fighting actually prevented hits.
The cheap shots.
Like cheap shots. Yeah. And then if you watch the evolution of when they started pulling it out, look at the guys that started getting, you know, accolades. It was those middleweight antagonist guys. Those became the new fighter. And they're like, these guys are guys that I would just punch and they would not be irrelevant. And then they became irrelevant. But they started hurting guys. And like some of those guys, you know who those guys are.
Oh, I know exactly.
We all know who those guys are in the game.
Sure.
They will purposely, by their job, hurt the person to win.
Yeah.
That's fine. But you're going to get beat up a lot for doing that. And you got to tip your hat to a guy that wants to do that. But there's a consequence for it. And with that consequence being gone, it's completely going to change the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It will become more dangerous. Guys will start sticking guys in the face. It's already happening.
Yeah.
You know, little things like that. Guys are going to be running around all over the place, running into each other, not knowing how to get hit. Let us police that element of the game because it's too rich for anybody else that ain't playing. You know, that's a dynamic of the game that it's very attractive. And I think it'll show. It's just you have to maintain it, you know.
Yeah.
You got to keep it in wraps. But I don't think you can take it out because I think it'll ruin the game.
I think so,
they're starting to do it in juniors.
Oh, yeah, they are. Yeah, they've been doing it for a few years
now. The injuries, they don't come from fighting.
No.
Like, it is totally preventative. Like. Yeah. And the money that's being made, you're not going to find somebody and it's going to hurt them. They're too young. Money is not, they're going to be like, it'll be a joke. Look how much I've been fined. It's $1.5 million, but they don't care. It's fine, $1.5 million.
Yeah.
You know, because they're young. They have no concept. They don't care.
Yeah.
But you punch them in the face. They don't want to go to the rink the next day and say, I got punched in the face last night. No.
No.
They don't want to do what the act that caused them to get punched in the face.
Yeah, right.
It's a great deterrent.
Yeah. No, I agree.
It worked.
Oh yeah, it worked. Yeah,
it did work.
So, and I don't know. They just changed the game for that violence factor. But I get it.
I still think there could be a happy medium. Like, you know, Broad Street Bullies, obviously crossing that line. No bench clearing brawls. You know what I mean? I think it's just gone too far the other way. You know, the modern day game where now there's zero accountability, right? I mean, so now you got, you know, Marchant licking people's faces and, you know, some weird stuff happening where that would never happen. You know, it's just a lack of respect. And, you know, anybody that's ever fought and understands that the honor in fighting and that respect that it breeds, right? But that kind of stuff, it just shows such a lack of respect. And it's just...
Yeah, and it's the lack of respect is for the game.
Yeah.
Like, it's for the game.
Right.
You're on the ice. Yeah, I understand that very much, especially because we put up a lot, man.
Yeah.
You put up your physical health on the line for the game. It means
Yeah, it's not just for fun.
You're showing it means more.
Yeah, right.
On a daily basis. Like, you are proving it on a daily basis. So that, but that, and that's why they're most loved guys in the locker room, you know? Like, I had to be funny for health.
Yeah, right.
It helped me deal with what I was going to do.
Sure, right, yeah.
You know, and it can be a distraction too sometimes, though, can it, Nasty? That's why I spent so much time with guys like you, because I would distract my teammates. They wouldn't be able to play.
Oh, man.
But I spent a lot of time with trainers before games, getting, you know, staying calm and stuff like that, because you know what it's like. You're getting ready for a different
game. We talked about that with Chief, just, like, I don't know how you guys did it, you know, going into games, especially when you first get called up, like, you're looking at the roster of the other team, and you probably already know who it is because it's in NHL, but you're like, I got to fight this guy tonight. Like, this is what I've got to do. Not that you couldn't play. You could. Like, you're a freak.
Yeah.
You are a freak.
Oh,
this guy, the size of you, the speed you had, the strength you had.
That.
Like an agile
marshmallow.
Like, I'm
like an agile marshmallow.
The name, the fridge, came from the size of you, but the way you moved was like, it was crazy. Like, I always, like, when I was younger, Charles Barkley, when he was at Auburn playing basketball, he was a heavier kid, but he could jump out of the gym, he could move, and you were like that. Even your days at the basketball league with me at Clarkie's gym, this guy,
the Great White Hope.
I'm not kidding you. Friggy's never.
I could
think
finger
you
roll
played,
the best of them.
You know, yeah, the Iceman, George Gervin. Yeah. But Friggy gets out there and, you know, probably doesn't know everything about basketball, but he knows I'm going to get the rebound.
Tell the backstory.
Prison
this.
Rules.
Well, this is in the summer at the skate zone in Voorhees. Right?
Yeah, we're Homer.
This is Homer, Hexie. Cato was playing for a while there.
Oh, yeah.
Barry, Brian, like,
bunch of
management.
Yeah.
Me and Nasty.
Yeah, but you
competitive
came over,
game.
They got ugly. Teeth missing.
Oh,
really? I still have.
Homer and Hexie almost fought.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They were like this.
That's why they had to play together.
Yeah, right.
They had to play together.
This never leaves.
But we were. Remember, you came over
to
Clarkie's.
We had to put them on the same team.
We did. We had to put them on the same team so they didn't fight. It was unbelievable. But Friggy came over and played in my men's league team at Clarkie's gym. Now, we're playing against guys that all played college basketball. Like, they were a little bit older, and some kids that were, like, playing. It was a really good league. So it's Friggy joins us for a few games. It's Homer. And there's another story about Homer with that whole thing. But Friggy's, you know, he's like, oh, what do? I'm like, come next to this guy, and I'm going to just run him off of you. Just stand there. So I'm running guys off screens, and the fridge is standing there, bouncing off. The guy's honking probably.
Put me in front of the net.
But he jumps up to get a rebound. I'm not exaggerating. This guy, you saw him.
Oh, yeah.
Athlete.
Explosive.
Like,
just,
oh, yeah, boing.
I swear, Fridgie's up over the rim, and I'm not exaggerating. He grabs the ball. He should have just slammed it, but he has no idea. So he come back down and then lay it up, and I remember saying to him, oh my, why didn't you dunk that? He goes, I can't dunk. I'm like, dude, you can dunk. You were this far with it, but it was funny because you're just such a freak athlete. But back to, but you guys, like, just getting ready for games, like the nap was like, Craig was in here a few weeks ago and he was just saying, trying to nap, you know, before some of the games. And I think that had a lot to do with your, like you said, the jokes, the personality that you have anyway, try to keep your mind off of what you had to do.
Yeah.
You know,
you had to prepare for two things. You had to prepare for hockey that you couldn't make any mistakes in.
Right.
You had to play mistake free to get on the ice.
Yeah.
Right.
Especially
so
in that third, fourth line role.
Yeah.
Right. You weren't allowed to make mistakes. You had to be perfect, which is on its head impossible. Right. Tocchet said to me one time when at the end of his career, he was on the fourth line and he goes, I don't know how you guys play. You can't even get into the game. Like, I'm in the game. You're not in the game.
He's
every game for me, man. Yeah. I haven't played a shift yet.
10 two defense later, right?
10 minutes in, I'm like, you're not going. He's like, I need to play like 10 minutes. I was like, well, we're going to play 5 probably. Maybe 3. 5 is like a big game night. Like, and he's just like, man. Yeah. But it's hard. It's hard to go out there, not make any mistakes, cold, right? Because you're going out cold every shift.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and then that's just the game, right? And then it's the game within the game that's happening. if there's guys messing around, you're like, shit, I got to deal with that. Next time I get in the ice, that's got to happen. So if I get on with him, I got to make sure I deal with that. Okay, I got to deal with that too. All right, now I got to fight that guy. Yeah. That's all going through while you're waiting for your next shift.
Yeah, right.
You're
yeah.
making sure you're implementing the rules as the game develops.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And the way that you do that best is act. Act, act, act. Don't talk. Don't wait. That's the way I did it. Like, sometimes you could do it talking, but I just went and fought. Get it. Yeah. Get it done.
Get it over
with. And by the end of it, if you're good at it, then guys don't want to mess with you. They're just like, okay.
Just let him sleep.
Yeah. Or you can be like, look, like, don't play like this tonight.
Yeah.
Because, you know, some guys would be like, all right. Or let him sleep. Some guys, you just like, don't hit him. Just let him try and play. If he tries and play, he doesn't think he's a hockey player.
Yeah, right.
Like that's every
that's how powerful guy. Accountability is, though. The fact that you're thinking like that, you know what I mean? And you as a tough guy, don't you know what I mean? Or another tough guy thinks that way because they don't want to deal with it. Is really showing you how powerful that accountability is.
You're kind of the guy that instills it.
Yeah,
accountability. Jesus, that guy's gonna, man. He didn't need to do that. Look at his nose. Like you just get your ass kicked, and your nose is literally under your eyes.
Yeah.
You remember the look on the faces of the young kids that come in at like rookie in your 20s and that like guy comes in. Like I remember Vaclav Pletka and Hubacek and seeing somebody's Jesse's nose underneath his eyes. And these kids are like
white as
they're looking at him and they're like moving in their stall. They're like, it's a different game over here. It's different over here. It's just completely different to some of the kids that see that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that stuff, seeing those guys come in there. But then they also know, oh, it's here for you. You know what I mean? I'll do that for you. And then when you do that for them, they feel
safe.
Well, you know?
That's
a cool dynamic, man.
You guys are so important to every team you guys played on from, you know, junior all the way through both of your careers.
Always
because everyone, you know, that's respected more than, you know, most. Mm. You know, from guys like you guys, you know what you did, and it's a tough way to make a living, man. And you guys both were good at it, and Fridge, you did a, you know,
you eat pretty good though on it.
What's that?
I say you eat pretty good. If you're with good veterans, you don't pay for
food. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Don't play the credit card game.
Yeah, exactly.
See, that's cool, man. You know, Forsberg, keep your card there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he would always buy for me. Never paid for a meal. Recky never paid for a meal if I was out with him.
That's great.
Yeah, that is cool, man. Yeah, I was like, why, man? It's like $100 steak. And I was like, I make $9 million. I'm getting paid three times by three different teams.
Right now.
Do you know what deferred payments are? That's when I learned about deferred payments. Yeah, Rex, I was lucky. I was fortunate in my career to play with some great players, man. Some all-star guys.
Yeah.
And obviously Clarkie in the history and Bernie Perrant and the guys that are here in the community still, like, you know, there's too many guys to name. Coached under Gretzky. I grew up in Edmonton.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, dreams came true in my career the whole ride. So
I remember your first year, you were in Trenton for just for a cup of coffee, basically, like 18 games.
And 17.
17. So I remember Billy calling up to my desk and said, hey, come down here. And I go downstairs and he says, hey, calling Fridge up. And I said, oh, sweet, okay, cool. Like, we need more toughness, right? And I said, okay, great, for tonight. He goes, yeah, I'm gonna get him up here and get his knuckles on a couple guys. Like, I'll never forget him saying that's exactly what he said.
Oh,
too.
God.
And Stutzy's just sitting there going, like, you know, because Stutzy obviously did that, you know, role, but it was great. Yeah, I gotta get Fridgy up here, get his knuckles on a couple guys. And you did. And you did right away.
Well, he came to the game that night and or the night before he made that call.
Yeah.
And he was actually at the game in Trenton.
In Trenton, yeah.
And they told me to go down there. They didn't tell me to go down there to fight. They said, work on your physical game. So I took that as like, I'm like, one, you're sending me down. You gotta understand, my life wasn't going good at this time.
Right,
like,
right. Yeah.
Full blown into some bad shit.
Yeah.
And I was just like, my life is over. I'm going the wrong way. I'm going down to the East Coast. Oh, I don't even know what I'm doing here. And they go down and work on your physical game. And I'm like, well, I'm a physical player. And I was like, well, I don't know what that means. I'll show them. And I went down there with that attitude.
Yeah.
And like, wasn't a good teammate. I was angry. and I beat up anybody that got in my way. I got in 17 fights in 17 games.
Wow. Yeah.
And I was going to say, you want me to work on my physical game? Fine. And I did it. I'd get kicked out of games. I put up some numbers too, but yeah. The one game, the last one before Billy called me up, I think I got, there was three guys. Two of them did not fight. One guy did. Peppered him, just buried that kid. One guy just crossed my path on the way, grabbed him, and then later in the game just beat a guy up that had never probably been in a fight in his life before, but was just in my arm's way. Like,
right.
I was a maniac. And
yeah.
Billy, you know, Billy, Billy loves the fights. Yeah. But he was a pretty boy. Like, he liked to score goals, yeah. Loved the fighters. And loved watching him too. And before the end of that game, he's like, we got to get Fedoruk back up here before he kills somebody.
Yes.
Those are the words that were said.
Yeah.
And the next day I got called up, and I never went back down, but...
Yeah.
That's funny. That's
amazing. Yeah, but that's part of it. Sometimes you go the other way, and normally it's not a good thing to go down, and it's usually either for punishment or you're just seeing... You know, we lost that pick.
Yeah,
you were a wasted pick, and that's what you feel like too. So
yeah,
well, you turned that around. Yeah. Obviously, you know, you went down there.
Yeah,
it's a wake up call for a lot of guys.
It's a wake up call. It wasn't for me. It was like, this is where, you know, that stroke of luck comes in, because I went down there saying, you know, I don't care what happens, and you know. That's just what happened. Like,
but you still performed, right?
I still performed. Yeah, just, you know, I don't know if that helped me or not.
Well, 17 fights in 17 games.
I didn't
games
care. I knew it was doing that. Yeah. Probably got some room. Active. Probably got a little more
right,
room.
I guess so, yeah.
Like, I'd get the puck and nobody would come near me. They'd be like, this way. It's open ice is over here. I mean, you can shoot from here if you want.
Yeah, right?
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
No. Easy league, man.
Yeah, but it was, I don't know, it was... It was crazy down there, man.
Oh, yeah, the jungle down there, for sure.
The coast, yeah. Me and Bolaris, they used to call us Boom Boom Bolaris and Fucked Up Fedoruk.
I wonder
why. I'm going to tell you one story about this. We went into Wheeling, and Wheeling had the Vandermeer brothers.
Yeah.
And two of them. It wasn't Jimmy. Jimmy wasn't there. It was Pistol.
Yeah.
Pete Vandermeer and...
his brother.
James, I think.
It was an offensive defenseman, right?
Or Paul.
He wasn't a fighter, though, right?
Jim, Dan, Pete, Joe, Paul, and Dan, right? Jim... All the said, that's what they are, right?
There might be two Dans.
They're good old Western boys. But they were, and they had like two, three tough guys. And anyways, we're in Wheeling, and me, Bolaris, and Francis Belanger, all with the Trenton at the time, and we were all fighting. So we go into Wheeling, and Wheeling's a pretty nasty place to play. And they had tough guys. I think it was Wheeling. So we went in there, and end of the game, we had a police escort out of the city. It got that bad. Wow. I bloodied a fan. Like, the first time ever happened. Wasn't my fault. It was the glass's fault. It's too loose. He was up against the glass, and I pushed against the glass because he pushed it first, and it went back into his face.
I bet you're a little
all
stronger.
All beer and fries everywhere.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. But it was a messy night, and we just mopped the floor with them, like physically embarrassed their whole team. I think Jesse had like three guys at one time he was beating up.
Wow.
Like, it was just bad. But it's a back-to-back game, and after that game, all three of us get called up.
Yeah.
That poor team. That
left
poor team. Trenton. Yeah. And they were back in Trenton. No tough guys. All three of us left, and it was a shit show. They absolutely got their asses handed to them, and we were all gone. None of us were there. We got called up to the Phantoms. So it was back-to-back. That's a great story. Pistol. Could tell a story too about him. Oh, what a legend.
Tough,
that whole family.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
What's with the water in Alberta? There's all these families coming out of there.
Yeah. All five of them played.
Hockey
right?
players.
Not in the NHL, but
yeah.
They all played. Wow. You ended up coaching briefly in Trenton, did you not?
1 year.
1 year? How did that go? I know there was a crazy story about...
That's when I realized I was not going to ever coach. Like, the game had changed too much. You couldn't even yell. Like, yelling was like not allowed, and I think I liked being around the team like that, but I enjoyed coaching. Like, I enjoyed getting them to
you know, I actually enjoyed the systems and having them execute and all. Like, I actually enjoyed coaching.
Yeah.
But I didn't enjoy being that close to the game. That close to the game out of retirement. I went to it in my first year, you know. And, I mean, you're still revved up. And the game's different. So when I'm expecting people to respond and do something, you have to remove yourself as the player and be the coach. And I wasn't able to do that. Yeah. I was still too close to the game. And
wasn't there a story about you?
I grabbed a guy.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, that's exactly
I grabbed
where I was
a guy
going.
Because I'm from the school. If you come in our bench, that's like, there's no goal zone. Don't touch the goalie. Don't come in our bench. Even coming near our bench is enough, you know. And I was behind the D-man, and this kid, he was in our faces all day, and he was like a middleweight guy. I'm like, somebody deal with him. And I would never send somebody out to fight. Nobody ever did that to me, and I'd never do that, but most guys would know. And I was like, I kept saying underneath my breath, somebody should kick this guy's fucking ass. You know what I mean? Like, and he scored a hat trick too, so then I was really boiled. And then he came, it was going by our bench, somebody was chirping him, and I'm talking to Vinny, the head coach. And he comes walked right into our bench and then stood there and like pushed one of our D-men, and our D-men sat down, and I was like, get him out of here. I went right over to him and I'm like, push him out. Like, our D-men are there. And I was like, I just grabbed him. And I said, you better get out of here. Like, he's playing, I'm coaching him, right when I had my hand on him. Vinny, the head coach, he's like, God, you can't touch him. And I'm like, I was like this. I'm like, fuck, you better get out of here. Well, I had to apologize to him after I got suspended. Yeah, that was
the end of your coaching
career. I was just like, Vinny's like, yeah, I don't think this is for you. Vinny's doing really good too.
Yeah, he is.
A scout with Vegas now, and a great, great hockey mind.
Yeah.
He's just like, yep. He's always chewing his pen. I don't think coaching's for you, Todd. Old Fridgy boy. You still belong in the press box, son. That's what he said to me. Yeah, it was funny, man.
That's hilarious.
That was my experience coaching.
A little brief stint. Well, we appreciate you coming by, Fridgy. This has been awesome.
Guys.
Always good to reconnect and have some laughs. So.
Yeah.
Appreciate you and what you're doing in your new life. And everything you've done along the way for me personally, because you were, you know, a guy I looked up to back in PA, and then obviously Phantoms, Flyers, and the whole bit. So
we lived
together.
We
lived together. Yeah, a lot of respect for you, brother.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. I like what you guys are doing here, man.
Thanks, bro.
Keep talking the talk about the game, man. People need to know. People love to know.
Yeah.
You know, the inner workings of our game. It's changing, so
yeah.
Keep so people attracted. It's a beautiful game, man. I love it.
Yeah.
For sure, man.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.